This is going to be interesting. I've got one hand, pieces of paper, a mic, and some glasses. No one prayed for my hand. I'm just going to say that out loud. Before I start, we've had some news. Some of you will know the Chevron family, and who attended this church for many years. Anyway, if you don't, it still matters. Eunice Chevron passed away this morning. She was only 30 years old. And I'd like us all just to pause for a moment and pray for the family and her, if we may. Precious Lord, you are the Alpha and the Omega. You are the beginning and the end. And you hold all of us as your children in your hand, Lord. And I want to thank you for Eunice, Lord. For those who knew her and those that didn't, we thank you that as a sister in you, Lord, she is now with you, Lord. She now knows all the things we talk about and pray about. She knows for real, Lord. She's looking into your beautiful face, Lord, full of love and kindness, that all her pain and all her suffering is over, and that joy abounds now in eternity. Amen. So, if you don't know, my name's Mark. I'm one of the senior leaders here. I also run Alpha. And before we start, so we're going to do quite a lot before we start. To the guys on the worship band, that was just fantastic. Thank you. If you're not in a relationship with Jesus, this might sound a bit weird, but when the Spirit connects with you and those guys lead you into those words, it's just the most beautiful experience. And I really feel like this really should just go home now and sit in it. But unfortunately, you've got 20 minutes with me. But thank you. It was very, very powerful. I wonder, when you sat at home, do you have a favourite chair? I found out today that Paul Cotton has a VIP chair in this church. I bet you lot didn't know that. I certainly didn't. So if you have a favourite chair, I wonder, have you ever sat there and wondered? I wonder where they come up with all this rubbish they talk about on a Sunday. No? You've never wondered why we do this? Well, I really believe this series is very important. And I spent a long 2 pages trying to avoid saying it's Nehemiah so you wouldn't know. But my wonderful wife has announced it's Nehemiah. So, skip. I think it is really important. Like in many churches around the world, and we're hearing lots of stories, particularly in our network, God is moving. And we're particularly seeing it in worship. Worship is deepening. Worship is getting longer. We want to sit in worship more and more. And I think this series speaks into that in a really interesting way, which I didn't think it did until I looked into it. So I want to encourage you to follow this through and see it as a season where God is probably telling us that there's a new step for us in this weeks and months. We've certainly seen a lot of amazing worship here in the last weeks, which is just fantastic. But back to that point, where do the teachings come from? We don't have anyone send them us. Pioneer don't ping us an email. The Archbishop of Canterbury keeps forgetting to send us the liturgy for the next 6 months. We seek God. And why I really want to emphasize that this must be important is because this is born out of Steve's prayer and God guiding him towards this. So it's not a random subject. It's going to speak to us in a way that we should really try and grasp. So we're not expanding our knowledge or ticking the box of studying the word, if that's what we do. Although it does all those things, we really are here because God wants us as a church to consider this now. So what do you think of when you hear the name Nehemiah? Do you think of walls? Do you think of a little Old Testament book that's a little bit curious? Do you think it reads more like Rob Strachan's planning office at the council? Do you see a spiritual text to it? The book reads as it should have more. Over the weeks as we study Nehemiah, it's worth remembering or locking into which little bit of your brain you want to. It was not really written as a standalone book. It was written as part of the book of Ezra. So Ezra and Nehemiah go together. And when you read them both, it's kind of, ooh, I wonder why they split them up. But it makes a lot of sense. And of course, Nehemiah, like Ezra, traveled from another place to be in Jerusalem when he started his work. Ezra from Babylon, Nehemiah from Susa. Just because I like history, and my topic's history today, really. The most likely date for Nehemiah returning is the spring of 445, 13 years after Ezra. And I think that's interesting, as we'll see in a minute. The gap probably matters. So my job is to introduce the series, not teach on it. And I spent the holiday yesterday trying to not teach on Nehemiah every time I wrote a piece of paper. I have to keep ripping it up because it's going to be in one of these sections. And I asked Steve this morning, having spent 2 hours trying to figure out what re means, to find out it means nothing. He wanted me to pretend it meant remember, restore, but I'm not doing that. But I think it works. So we're going to go through a few things over the coming weeks. We're going to go through remember, review, restore, renew, rebuild, reflect, reject. You can't read, so I'm doing it for you. Recover, report, and react. I think these are really interesting topics for us. Next week, Steve will lead us into who Nehemiah is. So I had to cross that page out as well. And the spiritual implications of the man himself. Starting with remember, though, do you notice anything about this process of re's? It struck me when I was looking at it that I think this is our path out of COVID. As a church, we had many prophetic words, if you remember, over that period. During that period, about renewal, about restoring, about rebuilding, about reflecting, and they're all there. So maybe the timing is interesting. I think we are in that process, and I wonder, do you think we're at stage 4 yet? Do you think we're at renew? When I was praying with the other senior leaders last week, I got a reword. I didn't know we were doing re's, but I got a reword as we prayed. I got restoration. I felt the Spirit was saying that this series and what's going on in this church is about restoring this church for purpose. But today, I'm focused, I've been instructed, it's walls. Have you ever tried to write a talk about walls? I've watched Sarah Beeny's House on repeat now to see if I could get anything about walls. I did quite a lot of work on, I've forgotten the name of the show, whatever, house building, walls. Ice cream, that's where I went. Can I have slide 3, Debbie? Thank you. I like this quote. Walls don't just keep people out. History shows they also change the people inside. At first glance, it should seem obvious, doesn't it? Why would Nehemiah build walls around Jerusalem or repair walls? It's got to be security, hasn't it? I suspect last night you had the same sort of thoughts. Who locked their door? Who checked the windows? Oh, there's some more anal ones than others. Who checked the carpet was still on the floor? No, okay. Security, it matters to us, isn't it? It's part of our human instincts to make ourselves safe. But I'm wondering if that's all this book of the Old Testament is about. Is it just telling us to be secure and that Nehemiah needed to be secure? Walls around dwellings is a very ancient human habit. Ancient and even the prehistoric peoples of this earth sought to establish safe zones by building city walls, some going back even to the 10th millennium BC. As I said, we all imagine it's all about keeping out the threat of violence. But history shows us that the early attempts to curtail violence and the building of walls generally had much less to do with when violence occurred, but was much more focused on where the violence was going to occur. Walls were considered not just for defense, they were considered they would create peace. 4,000 years ago, I wasn't there, but I understand reliably, a Mesopotamian king named Shulla, who was the builder of the very first border wall we know of on Earth, wrote that his fortifications would finally allow the people to rest in peace in their dwelling. He was not just reflecting on his current time, he was looking at 6,000 years of this approach. He was worried about people having peace, not just security. So those early worlds didn't just reduce violence by deterring invasion, as we presume. They did something very different. The security afforded by walls did not just defend it, it changed inhabitants of ancient cities. They became able to be accustomed to peace. So what do you do when you're not worried? They began to sleep easy at night, without fear of ambush and harm. They reduced their training for war. Many cities banned the carrying of weapons inside walls. Fewer and fewer men had to become soldiers. The first walls made possible a revolution in humanity. Some would call it the civilization of humanity. It allowed a way It allowed a new way to live as a community where the majority of males at the time could choose to devote themselves to other things than learning how to kill. Having become a civilian, they took up the kind of tasks that we civilians would take up. So I wonder, was Nehemiah knowing something that we with 21st century heads can't really know when we read the book? The walls of Jerusalem needed to be rebuilt, not only to keep out the bad boys. I use bad boys because we're struggling pronouncing the names. not really. But also to allow the restoration of society's function. Let's think about that. What's society's function if you're Israel? To worship God. It's more. Remember I said the book of Ezra and Nehemiah are really the same book split in two. Ezra was coming with spiritual restoration with the Levites. The people needed the physical stability to even think about that. You can't really honestly be focused on prayer, as Ezra and his Levites wanted to be, if you've got a sword in one hand and one eye open looking for the people coming in behind you. That's why we lock the door. Thus the Israelite, with the security of a wall, could refocus. Again, I think of life with broken walls. Whatever your role in life, in that time, you also had to be a soldier. How did that freak out your mind? I'm a Levite, I'm a priest, I'm a warrior. You had to protect yourself, you had to protect your family, you had to protect your property, you had to protect your people. As a male in that time, that was your first endearing point. They could choose now because they had achieved the security. The wall was up in 52 days. Not by constantly preparing, practicing for war, but doing work. They were stacking bricks. They were tampering earth until they had created the structures that freed them from their fears. When we read the Bible, and when we do, we should always try to have some context of the time in mind. We read farmers, or we read about people working in the wine presses, and we have a picture born of our freedoms. Do you ever picture them with a sword in their hand? However, as we read the remnant that Nehemiah found in Judea, we must consider this, that life without the wall meant they had a lot of things to focus on, not and only just God. Beyond the walls, the general level of insecurity produced a completely different society they had to live in, as we've talked about. But from birth, boys were deliberately acclimatized to violence. They were required to fight and endure painful rituals of manhood to make them tough. Think of all the times Israelites summoned an army together. There were no fatigues. These were just ordinary folk, picking up whatever they could to hurt someone with. Their language actually didn't even have a word for soldier. They just used the word man. So, quite a society. Walls changed society and freed people to focus not on this warlike security, but perhaps on what really, really mattered to them. The restoration of the Jerusalem walls was not simply pride to restore a broken city, as perhaps I thought when I first read it, but a platform to allow the return of true worship, a platform to rededicate to God. It was absolutely crucial. They just couldn't focus on what their job was on this earth because they had to defend themselves. This wall freeing people, of course, seems self-evident. It's interesting to know, though, just as an aside, that once they were free and they could think about things, and particularly the Greeks loved to think about things, didn't they? They started to worry they were becoming a bit soft. We see in Nehemiah that once the work was done, they turned to reading the book of Moses. They gathered together. Ezra led them in prayer. He taught them what they'd forgotten about God. And again, they came back to prayer and they dedicated their whole lives and families to God, safe in the knowledge that they could now make that their 168. Perhaps in a very, very small way, this is a picture of God's restoration of humanity, full stop. Moving from the necessary need at the time to defend in a broken world to being a people free to simply worship him and grow in him. Can I have the next slide, please? And the next one. But this is all theory, isn't it? What about the walls? Where are they? Well, there's part of Nehemiah's wall. And you can probably just see a small hobbit, and I think it's a lady, standing there. Not all of it is his wall, but the middle bit is his wall. I've actually been there. It's quite a big wall, isn't it? Can the next slide, please? So what of walls today? Are they just things we see in York when we go visiting, or the medieval ones we see in Jerusalem, or even the plaques we have in our own city that was once walled in? Can the next slide, please? Of course, very sadly, walls have returned to fashion, haven't they, in the last years? Whether it's Mr. Trump building his wall across the borders of Mexico, or the sad wall in Israel separating the Palestinians from the rest of Israel. We're doing a lot of wall building again in the name of security. But aside from the walls being built in the US or standing in Israel again, what are our walls? Do we need walls? Modern society has built many non-tangible walls to allow us to do other things, just as the ancient walls allowed those that thought to take priority over violence. We have police to stop crime and violence against us. We have elected representatives to manage and run the services that should liberate us from tasks and supply us with what we need. We have the law seeking to govern behaviour in a way that lets us do what we want to do. There are many examples of how we've built our own walls. I mean, can you imagine each morning, just before you got up for church, the first thing you've got to do is get your defence kit out. You've got to make sure the family's safe. You've got to go and get some food. Make sure no one is going to give you some trouble while you're getting the food. You've got to make sure the other tribes aren't around. And then you've got to get the kids ready for church. Our walls are mainly not physical, but they are there. Many we never think of or even know about. GCHQ in Cheltenham is constantly, I understand, battling cyber attacks every minute of the day. We sit in our coffee shops and sip latte and surf the internet at the time. We've got walls all around us. As part of this series, we want to be real, though, and we want to recognise the people that help build our walls and are our wall watchmen in this day, who, like in Jerusalem, restored the walls that allow us the freedom to be what we want to be. So we will, each week of this series, be inviting those wall builders and those wall protectors in so we can pray with them, pray for them, to show them that we value them and that God values them because they give us freedom to worship him, if nothing else. Right, let's bring this to a conclusion. Nehemiah's story is then a matter of headlines, I think. We need to look deeper. This is not just a guy. I can't talk about what he used to do. It's not just a guy who who came to the town and started a program of building. I think this man knew something, and in that time we read about in fasting and prayer, I think he saw it. He saw he needed to establish a secure foundation, not just for physical security. He saw that the people needed to have headspace. They needed to have an environment to return to God. Remember, they were a long way from God right now. They were a long way from God. And they needed a place where they could do that, to have the time to think, to pray, to worship, to study and to return to God, and to seek the restoration of a relationship with God. And they did. We read that they did. I admit it didn't seem to work for very long, but moving on. But what do you and I need to do for ourselves in our times? You see, we hear wall and we hear obstruction. We hear wall, I think we hear a bad thing. But I live in an old house which has a walled garden. And this is my mother's quote. She was yabbering on in my ear all day yesterday when I was trying to write this. But she was right. Oh, I love that garden. Why do I love that garden? Because it's got these big walls around it and I can just be me in it. Thankfully, I'm not a nudist. But, yeah, thank God. But I can just express myself. I've lived in houses where they're overlooked too. And I know it feels slightly different. So actually, walls aren't always a bad thing. Sometimes they give us freedom as well. We don't want walls that keep us spiritually isolated, of course, or protected from our world. But we can build spiritual walls that are foundational, like Nehemiah's, so we can focus on our Father. We can build metaphoric walls of habit. We can build metaphoric walls of function, things we do. Walls that keep out things that aren't good for us and keep in things that are good for us. So, what metaphoric walls should we build in our lives today that would set us free, not hem us in? What wall will free us to walk better as Jesus' disciples in our time, in our life, and in our walk? I don't know. You know. There'll be the things that bite at you and get at you. There'll be things that attack you. There'll be things that come at you every single day of your life, because it does me. What walls can we build? What functions can we create, like Nehemiah did, to allow us the headspace to be Jesus' disciples? Thank you.